It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your hosts, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell and Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 252-247-7282, and let's talk legal.
And let's do that. Let's jump into it right now. On the phone with us this morning is our good friend Cecil Harvell. Good morning, Cecil. How are you?
Good morning. How are you, Mike?
Hey, wonderful on this Tuesday, a week before the general election. And what are we going to be discussing today, Cecil?
Michael, let's talk about the Executor's Commission, what it is and how it's defined and when it's applied. There seems to be a lot of confusion about exactly some of the mysteries surrounding the, quote, Executor's Commission.
Okay.
And Mike, you know, we start with the fact, you and I have spoken many times about the fact that, you know, sometimes we have an executor. Sometimes the terminology changes ever so slightly to, quote, administrator.
Sure, sure.
An administrator is administrating an estate under North Carolina law. An executor is administering the estate pursuant to the last will and testament. The job description is identical whether you are administrator or whether you're executor. The terminologies are kind of interchangeable. And the commission or payment to this individual, whether they be an administrator or whether they be an executor, is also the same. The procedures, the mysteries in and around that payment, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Michael, you know, the administrator of an estate is a very significant legal role. It is a significant personal commitment to be an executor or administrator of an estate. It not only demands a lot of time, but it also demands some judgment. There are certain questions that can arise that don't have necessarily clairvoyant answers, and so there is some discretion that executors have to apply in their particular estate that they're handling. But by and large, the duty of the fiduciary, the executor, the administrator, is to marshal together the assets, review the tax returns for the last 3 years, locate the mail and follow it closely for the first, say, you know, 3, 4, 5 months, so as to really feel that they have a handle on all of the assets of the estate.
Mm-hmm.
Once the notice is put in the newspaper as to creditors, they then, within 3 months, will have received, Mike, the bills that the decedent owed. And they then put those creditors, and pay those creditors according to, you know, of course, what assets happen to be in the estate.
Sure.
We've talked about this before, you know, that right there can be, that's easier said than done. I mean, suppose there are more creditors than there are assets.
Right. How do you prioritize?
Or suppose the biggest creditor of the estate is the surviving spouse, versus the hospital bill. Or whatever other bill there might be, creditor there might be.
Mm-hmm.
How do you put these things in line? How do you get the ducks in a row, so to speak? Again, you begin to see that serving as an executor can many times not just be, you know, it can require some judgment and some expertise, and of course, obviously, seeking out some legal and accounting advice, and there's one of the examples. Which bills do I pay first?
Is there a protocol, Cecil, for what bills do get lined up first? In other words, like if you owe taxes versus
yes.
an individual debt to a next-door neighbor, for instance, does the tax man get first shot, then individuals?
Well, first of all, Mike, absolutely, there is a pecking order. And it's set forth very clearly by North Carolina statute and by North Carolina case law. But in the example you give, and I think you know the answer to the question,
yeah,
and probably all of our listeners, the tax man goes up to the top of the list.
Mm-hmm, of course.
So tax liability is absolutely right up at the top of the list, and is going to get satisfied before any other creditors can be satisfied. But real quickly, let's suppose that an executor, you know, bless their hearts, just doesn't know that and goes ahead and pays off a hospital bill, mm-hmm, you know, $10,000 or $15,000, and then finds out that there was an outstanding Internal Revenue Service bill, you know, for $50,000, and that they no longer have the money, to pay the $50,000, Internal Revenue Service bill because they went ahead and paid other bills first. This, of course, is a nightmare, mm, Michael, and this, of course, could create individual liability for the executor in a case like that. So, again, we're going to get to what the executor is paid here in a minute or two, but you begin to see what a lot of executors say to myself and, of course, to Wes and other, Andrew Foster, other lawyers at the office when all this is said and done. Many times the comment is, my goodness, I had no idea that so much was involved. And I'm glad to have had legal guidance with it. But also, you know, boy, oh boy, has it been, you know, a physical and emotional, a psychological strain to take all this on and to do it correctly.
Yeah, I don't want to take you off track, Cecil, but I had a good friend of mine and a listener to the show here. She's in a situation where she's the executor of her father's estate, and she has two siblings, and they have a lot of his property, which is on, they're trying to liquidate and sell. Being the executor, she learned a week or so ago that one of her sisters took an offer from an individual for a piece of property and accepted the offer without confirming with the executor, her sister. What is that situation? Is that something that is can that happen, or does the executor have the final say in liquidating of property in an estate?
Well, the it depends. The final say, though, would be with the heirs, whoever the one or two or three happen to be.
Okay.
One single heir, the general rule would be that one single heir, is not going to be able to dictate, unilaterally the acceptance of an offer on a piece of real property. They just don't have the authority to do that, because the property was inherited pursuant to the will or either according to statute by all the children.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of the children now are going to need to be involved in how the property is sold. Now, that's the general rule. The exception, there's always an exception.
Right.
The exception to that rule is when the executor, and this would have to be in a will, last will and testament, when the executor specifically devises the real property, excuse me, not the executor, the testator, the maker of the will,
mm-hmm,
specifically devises the real property to the executor and directs them in the will to sell it.
Okay.
I hereby devise and bequeath ABC Street,
mm-hmm,
to my executor, and I direct that my executor sell it and distribute the assets of the sale pursuant to the following terms.
Pretty
if
simple.
That kind of language is in a will, and by the way, that is rare. That's not typical of what a will would say.
Mm-hmm.
Most makers, testators of a will do not put that kind of particularity in the will, that it must be sold. There are disadvantages to that. I mean, for instance, suppose one of the heirs wants to keep the property and it doesn't need to be sold because one of the heirs is going to take the property as their share of the estate,
mm-hmm,
things like that. But back on track here a minute,
sure,
Michael. If there's a direction in the will to sell the property, then under your facts that you asked me, the decision-making power would vest with the executor, and they would have the authority to accept an offer on the property and to sell it according to the terms that they think are appropriate.
Okay, good deal. Okay, I didn't mean to take you off track there, but it was kind of, she asked me that this past week or so, and we were talking about the executor, and we were talking about the commissions of the executor. There's a lot of heavy lifting involved in being an executor, and you're starting to flesh that out and illustrate that for the listeners. That's important.
Well, there is, and of course that that will play into how the court eventually considers awarding the payment to the executor or administrator, whichever hat they're wearing. Again, their duties are the same. Now, after the executor has marshaled together the asset and put into play the creditors and has appropriately managed the debts of the estate, satisfied any kind of spousal interest that might exist in an estate, handled the creditors, then of course the executor is in a position now to begin to make distributions under the last will and testament or under North Carolina law to the heirs of the estate. And so that then would be the next step, to do. Also, before this kind of thing is done, you know, the tax issues have to be looked at. You know, has the decedent filed their tax returns? Are they up to date? Is there any tax due? Do we need to hold back any funds in the estate for tax liability for this year, the year in which the decedent died, whereby the tax return would be due the following year, as we know, but do we need to hold back funds? Will the estate itself create taxable income? That's a technical issue, but there is a tax return that is many times due when, in fact, the estate generates income and on its own. If there's an account and that account throws off interest during the settlement of the estate, then, of course, the IRS, they want their share of that interest.
Sure.
So that's known as a fiduciary income tax return. But anyway, once the tax issues are also resolved, then the fiduciary is ready to begin to make a distribution.
You know, if you are chosen as the executor of your family, of your father or mother's estate once they pass, it sounds at the on the surface like, okay, that's great. But there, you know, there's no roadmap. You haven't done this before. Is that something that you provide at Harvell and Collins when a client walks in and says, you know, I'm going to be the executor, or when a parent says, my son Michael is going to be the executor? Do you map these things out for people? Because my head's starting to spin with all the things you're telling me that we have to do to liquid, you know, to get this all properly closed out. Surely you've got to give them some direction and guidance and roadmaps.
Yeah. No, absolutely, Mike. That's what we do at Harvell and Collins.
Yeah.
We do it, you know, every day, you know, times 10, so to speak. I mean, this is exactly what we do. We many times are serving as the legal counsel for the fiduciary, for the executor. That is generally, what we do. Every now and then, a testator or someone making out the will, maybe they don't have children, maybe they are estranged from a child that they do have, maybe they feel that their estate just cannot be appropriately handled by the child that they do have for whatever reason. That child, you know, maybe it could be handicapped, it could be it could have had, you know, different life issues.
Right.
And so therefore, there are a few files. It is the exception to the rule, but it does happen where actually the lawyer themselves will serve as the executor.
They step in.
After the client, you know, considers all of their choices and considers the pros and cons, then some clients may ask the attorney to serve, as the executor. That again is the exception to the rule, because most clients, you know, they have children, they have brothers, sisters, nieces, nephews, and we suggest, by the way, our advice always at the law firm is, if you have a child that can serve as your executor, keep in mind we will be here to answer the questions and to guide your child and to keep them on the right track. But if you have a relative, child, brother, sister, that can serve as your executor, we suggest that you appoint your family member as your fiduciary, and then we here at Harvell and Collins will guide you along the way.
Makes sense. Let's hold that thought there, Cecil. We'll take our first break here. If you wish to join the conversation or have a question, perhaps you're in a similar situation, call 252-222-4848 now to get on the air with Cecil. He can answer your question. If you missed this opportunity and you want to still talk to Cecil, and I would suggest you do, go to harvellandcollins.com or call the office today at 252-726-9050. We'll be right back with more Let's Talk Legal after this brief timeout. Welcome back to Let's Talk Legal with Cecil Harvell. We have Cecil on the line today. We're talking about the Executor's Commission in handling an estate. And just scratching the surface here on the responsibilities. But we'll continue on in our conversation, and I'll yield my time to you, Counselor.
Okay, Mike. Listen, time just flies.
It does.
I don't know where our 30 minutes is going, but I better get to the point here, right?
That's right. We're missing our clock watcher, Wes. He's always good at keeping us on schedule, but it's
there. We go.
We're flying solo today, buddy. So it's us.
That's right. Wes is good at so many things, including being a great lawyer.
He's a fantastic attorney. Yes.
Listen, Michael. This is the bottom line. If you are an executor and/or administrator of an estate, you can petition in the estate with the clerk of court who is overseeing the estate for a commission up to 5% of the value of the liquid assets in the estate. By liquid assets, I mean stocks, bonds, bank accounts, CDs, any insurance that might be payable to the estate. Any liquid asset, meaning cash and or money asset in the estate, you are entitled to ask the clerk for a commission not to exceed 5%. Notice that I did not include in that the real property. Real property being land, of course, many times having a house on it. Doesn't have to have a house. Land doesn't have to have a house on it, but many times it does. So in other words, the residence or the selling of the home or the sale of the mountain property or the beach house or whatever the circumstances might be there, that is a real property transaction, and that does not allow the executor. The executor is not allowed to take a 5% commission on the sale of real property. Unless, of course, again, the exception to the rule, the real property the decedent has instructed the executor to sell the property.
Okay.
Or the property is having to be sold in order to pay creditors. But generally speaking, the commission does not apply to real property. And the commission, again, is this 5%. I see that we're kind of running out of time, but it's this 5%. And I want to also say that it does, the clerk, under certain circumstances, may not award all of the 5%. They may only award 4% or maybe 3.5%. The law is written is that the executor's commission is paid within the discretion of the clerk of court, and that the executor's commission is not to exceed 5% of the value of the liquidity passing through the estate. And so that is the general rule by which the clerk of court who is overseeing the settlement of the estate, that would be the standard that they would use. So questions come up like, well, I had to travel here to handle the estate. I live in Pennsylvania. I had to get hotel bills I have hotel bills while I'm here. I've had to do this. I've had to do that. All of those things are going to be need to be looked at very carefully, and to be determined whether they're going to be part of the 5% commission that will be addressed with the clerk of court, or whether in some circumstances those can be expenses of the settlement of the estate over and beyond the executor's commission. That is a place, again, Mike, that's a trap, that's a hole that many of our fiduciaries fall into. Mm-hmm. They will potentially feel that they deserve the 5%,
sure.
Of course. There's no question about that particularly. But in addition to that, you know, they'll put on the platter things like all of their flights and their travel expenses and their hotel bills or their rental of their house while they're here for a month, things of that nature, and even food and lodging. And that kind of stuff is going to have to get talked about.
Before we go to our final break, I want to throw this question out at you, because it sounds like there's some subjectivity in the commission you get up to 5%. It could be 3, it could be 4, it could be 5, or some fraction in there. One thing that's not subjective, though, is the payment of the commission. Does that come off the top, or is that filtered after everything is sold? Is the commission paid off the top?
No, yes. The commission would be paid as an administrative expense, much like a bill, mm-hmm. And therefore it would come out of the gross estate before there is a distribution.
Gotcha.
To the heirs.
That's good. I wanted to get that out there. We'll take our final break here, and if you want to learn more about this, I advise you to call Harvell and Collins today at 252-726-9050. Or go online to harvellandcollins.com. We'll come back with our closing argument on this important topic after this brief timeout. Stay tuned. Welcome back to our final segment of Let's Talk Legal. We're talking with Cecil Harvell. We're talking about executors' commissions. And, Cecil, we have a question from a listener. Bob in Moorhead City wants to know,
sure.
If the commission given to the executor is taxable.
It is. And thank you, Bob. That's a nuance that I didn't quite get to. That commission is considered income to the recipient, and it would need to be reported on the next year's tax return. As such, it is also a deduction in the estate if the estate throws off any kind of income whereby any tax would be due. There is a deduction for any kind of executor's commission. So it's a deduction to the estate when it can be used as such, but it is absolutely income to the receiver.
Good question. Good question, Bob, and thank you. And, you know, these questions, Cecil, and what you've mapped out for us, laid out for us today, all the more reason to get counsel to guide you through this process, because, you know, no one really has done it before until you're actually thrown into the mix and getting legal counsel at Harvell and Collins.
And one last thing to
sure.
say, Mike,
30 seconds.
In our last 30 seconds here is, I just want to be, because I know our listeners are thinking, my word, how complicated this sounds. It must cost a fortune. It doesn't cost a fortune. Lawyers do not charge a percentage of the estate to give the executor mm-hmm. advice and to lead them through this process. This is not a file whereby the lawyer sits down and says,